Jesus wants us to know what it's like to be part of his team, but that's hard for us to imagine, so he tells us stories of things that remind him of what that's like. And anybody can listen to his stories, but only some people will get what he says. I hope today that you will get this story, because taking chances is such an important part of playing on a winning team. In Matthew chapter 25, verse 14, Jesus starts the story this way. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. He's an entrepreneur. He's wildly successful. He works hard growing his business that he owns. But he has decided he needs a vacation, and he has heard that Maui is very nice this time of year. What time of year isn't it very nice there? So he calls in three of his foremen, guys who have proven reliable in the past, and he tells them that he's leaving for some extended R&R, and he hands them the keys to the store. In verse 15, Jesus said, to one, the man gave 5 bags of gold, to another, 2 bags, and to another, 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. Best guess, a bag of gold back then was about 20 years' salary. So the owner entrusts one guy with his year's salary in one lump sum, literally a lump sum. And he says, do something with the company, for the company with it. He hands another guy 40 times his yearly salary. And he says, here, do something good for our company. And he gives another guy 100 times what he gets paid each year. And he says, you're in charge of this money. What if your owner at your job put you in charge of your salary plus 2 zeros? You make $40,000 a year. One day your boss comes up and says, we like how you represent the company. We think you've got a good head on your shoulders, and we're going to promote you. And you go, oh, nice. You're going to promote me to what? And they said, we're going to let you have $4 million of company money. And you go, whoa, $4 million. Okay, what do you want me to do with it? And they say, you decide. We trust you. We believe in you. Use it as you see fit for the good of our company. And in Jesus' story, the owner gave a certain amount to each guy according to his ability. The owner trusted all three men, but he trusted them with different amounts based on what he knew that they could do, which leads me to a footnote. It is a short footnote, but it is relevant in today's world, I think. The owner in this story was ready to divide 8 bags of gold between 3 people. 8 bags between 3 people. If we were telling the story today, the owner would give 3 bags to the first guy, 3 bags to the second guy, and then he would have to go borrow a bag of gold from the government so that he could give 3 bags to the last guy, because today everybody has to get exactly the same, right? That's not how life is, though. That's not how life works. And in Jesus' story, that's not what this guy did. This man distributed his wealth unevenly, disproportionately, and wisely. Here's the point of the footnote. Kids, your parents will not treat you and your siblings exactly the same. They won't, because you and your siblings are not the same. They may give you more. They may give them more. They may change that around over the time. They'll do what they think is best based on your current abilities, like this man. Point of the footnote, folks, your friends will not treat you and the other people in their lives the exact same. Your friends will treat people in their lives differently. Sometimes that might seem to work in your favor. Sometimes that might work to your hurt. Here's the point of the footnote. Employees, your boss will not treat you and the other workers exactly the same. See, all men are created equal, but after you're created, equal never really happens again. End of footnote. In Jesus' story, the owner dishes out the privileges differently to each guy based on what he knew they could handle. And here's how it went when he went away. In verse 16, the man who had received 5 bags of gold went out at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. The owner had clearly chosen wisely. He gave this guy a lot, and the first guy was a real go-getter. When he was given the chance, he put a plan together, and he executed it beautifully. He bought some land. He used some company machinery. He used some company workers. He built some houses. He developed a very nice neighborhood called Cobblestone. And he sold the houses, and he made a lot of money. Verse 17 says, so also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. Now, this man didn't have as much to work with as the first guy, but he was on the ball, too. And he knew that all those nice new homeowners that lived in all those nice new homes would have nice new cars. And they would need a nice new car wash nearby. So he used his money to buy Coles and Parks, and he raised the whole building, and he built Royal Wash. And after he gave a free month of car washes away to everybody, money started rolling in. And he made a lot. But, verse 18 says, but the man who received 1 bag went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. This man liked keeping money in his mattress, but his serta was already full, so he buried his boss's money in the backyard. Verse 19 says, after a long time, the master of those three servants returned and settled accounts with them. I mean, it was a long time. He was in Maui, so he stretched his two-week vacation into, you know, like 2 years. But when he got back, golden tan, lots of chocolate macadamia nuts giveaway, he called in the three guys for the annual review, and verse 20 says, the man who received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The boss man, when he heard what the first guy did, said, what? You doubled my money? Nice. I am going to give you more money to work with. Verse 22, the man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. And his master replied, listen to this, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Did you notice the money was inequitably distributed? One guy got 5, one guy got 2, but the commendation was exactly the same, word for word, from the boss. The boss guy said to the second man, what? You doubled my money? Nice. I am going to give you more money to work with. They had not gotten the same results, but they had both done really good work. And he said that they would both be rewarded handsomely for their effort. In verse 25, Jesus says, then the man who received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went out and I hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. This guy knew his master valued money. He valued money a lot, and a year's salary is a lot of money. So he kept it for him. He kept it safe and sound and returned it to him, every last penny. Didn't Benjamin Franklin teach us that a penny saved is a penny earned? Isn't that good old-fashioned wisdom? You make all you can all you make, and you sit on your can? That's what this guy did. Wasn't that what the last guy did? He's like a very responsible move on behalf of his boss. He didn't lose anything. But apparently the boss didn't like that because he went ballistic. In verse 26, the boss said, his master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the banker so that when I returned, I would have at least received it back with interest. And we think, as we read this story, well, yeah, he could have done, at least done that. He kind of messed up there. Verse 28, the master says, so take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And we think, whoa, that's kind of unfair. I mean, the first guy's already got 10. If he's going to take it away from the last guy, why doesn't he at least give it to the second guy? He's only got 4. But if you look at this from a business standpoint, it makes good sense, right? You want your best money earner to have the most money to work with. It's a good move on the master's part. Verse 30, then he says, throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And we think, wow, that got dark quickly. I mean, taking his bag of gold away is kind of mean, but now you're going to fire him and kick him out, boot him out the back door into the alley in the back? Kind of reminds me of the time when the past and the present and the future all walked into a bar, and it was real tense. It was not a good moment here with this last guy. Apparently, the owner of the company was pretty ticked off. Apparently, the thing that irked him so much was that the guy didn't do anything with the money. The guy had been given resources, but out of fear, he chose not to do anything with it. And it seems like maybe that's the point of the story. If you do not develop what you're given, it will be taken away, and you'll end up with nothing. That's true in so many ways in life, isn't it? If you're given a musical gift, but you choose not to work at it, you will never become a great musician. If you're given an amazing husband or wife, but you don't continue to develop that relationship, you can end up one day looking at each other and saying, there's nothing here anymore. If you're given a superior intellect, but you don't apply yourself to learning, you'll end up with some pretty average grades at a pretty average college, which will lead to a pretty average career. If you win the 1.6 billion Mega Millions jackpot drawing, but you do not invest that well. And investing your winnings well obviously includes a generous donation to your favorite church. But after a while, You could end up with nothing to show for the money that you won. If you move into a new home and the previous occupants had a beautiful and bountiful garden in their backyard, you might benefit the first year, whether you work it or not, but eventually that garden will turn back into an unproductive piece of land if you put no investment in it. If you're given a studly athletic body, but you don't keep working it and keeping it in shape, you might end up standing on a pickleball court someday, thinking, wow, what an old fart I am. Hypothetically speaking, of course, I'm just. In life, over the long haul, if you do nothing, you get nothing. Plus, you lose what you had. It is the way of the world, and it is the point of Jesus' story. But it goes deeper than that, because the chapter that we're reading from starts out with Jesus saying, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. This is what it's like to be part of my team. So more than just being willing to work at what you've been given, this story tells us how to use best what we've been given, which is for the benefit of the one who gave it to us. If God has given you something in life and you use it solely for your own advantage, you probably won't lose it because you're still using it. But you won't get the best out of it because you're aiming in the wrong direction. If it's all for you, if you use everything you have for you, then you're missing out on the best. Some people, given, for example, great leadership skills, translate that into positions of power, which they use to move their way up the social and economic and political ladder. And in the end, they're powerful, wealthy, popular people, but they are not honoring the one who gave it to them. And if the profits you make from the gifts that you've been given do not accrue to the one who gave it to you, in the end, you're not really using the gifts that you've been given for the right reason, for the right purpose. Have you ever played the game Apples to Apples? So you get 7 different cards with pictures on them, and somebody turns over a card that describes something. The card might say tasty or funny or small or wondrous. And all the other players have to offer that person a card that they think best represents that word. And the first person gets to decide which card best conveys the essence of the topic. So, for example, if the word was cursed, if the card said cursed, someone might put down a picture of Nate Peterman. Or someone might put down a picture of Josh Allen. Or someone might put a picture down of Sean McDermott. Or, personally, I would throw down an aerial view of Western New York. I think that just covers all of that. The key to winning apples to apples is to know your judge, to know the one who's judging. If the player judging is a little girl and the word is cute, try a picture of puppies. If the player judging is a young mother and the word is cute, put down a picture of a baby. If the word is cute and the player judging is a middle-aged lady, I'm saying maybe Bradley Cooper or Ryan Reynolds or, well, you don't have a picture of me, so that one, never mind. You got to know how your judge thinks, because what matters to them is what matters in the game. And in Jesus' story, the judge is the business owner, and he really wants his business to boom. So when the first two guys doubled what he had invested in them, he loved that. But when the third guy didn't do anything with what he'd been given, that was unforgivable. So the question is, what does the judge want? God is the one who gave you your abilities. What proceeds are important for him to see? So the two most important things ever to him, according to his son, can you name them? The two most important things in the world are for you to love God and to love other people. So if you're using your gifts, your talents, your bags of gold for that, loving God and loving other people, good on you. God also apparently likes fruit. He likes fruit in your life. He wants to grow things in you like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. He wants to see things like that popping up in your life. And he likes other kinds of fruit where you reproduce and you help other people choose to follow Jesus too. And if we're using the stuff that God gives us to come up with more fruit like that in our lives and in other people, that's good. But to fully maximize our resources, we need to use them, what God gives us, for what he wants. Can you see that? So God gives us our stuff. He gives us our strength. He gives us our smarts. He gives us our cars. He gives us our cash. He gives us our families. And when we don't put them to use, we lose them. And if we don't produce stuff God likes with them, then we will not reap long-term dividends from them. But there's one more lesson built into Jesus' story, and this is it. It's kind of hidden, but please notice, you won't fail if you try, but if you don't try, you fail. I know the story Jesus tells is just a snapshot of real life, but look at the numbers. There are three guys in this story. Two of them tried to do something with what they'd been given, and both succeeded. 100% success rate there. One guy didn't try anything that might fail, and he ended up losing. Think about it. It's not easy to double your money. You got to take some chances to double your money. But both guys who tried to do something came back with 100% profit. Now, did they really build a new subdivision and a new car wash? I doubt that. Probably not. But they did something daring because you can't double money without risk, danger. But they knew that their owner took risks with his money, and they were doing it for him with what he had staked them with. So they said, okay, let's go out and try. And the two that tried in this story succeeded fabulously. There's no loser in here who tried. The only guy who didn't win in Jesus' story is the guy who was afraid to even give it a shot. He's the kind of guy who would never iron a four-leaf clover because he didn't want to press his luck. Which apparently I did with that, but I think the point of this story is that people on the winning teams are people who take chances. And Jesus' team is a winning team. Therefore, he wants us to take chances. Like what? Should we take today's offering over to Finger Lakes and pick a horse? Reminds me of the chicken who ate the racing form and started laying odds. Should we take our paychecks, our weekly paychecks, should we all head to the casino and put it all on black? Probably not. Paul warned Timothy to flee from that kind of stuff, to avoid that kind of stuff. In 1 Timothy 6, Paul says, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction, people who want to get rich. Paul says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Paul says, no get-rich-quick plans. That won't work. So if those aren't the kind of chances Jesus wants from his team, what kind of chances are we supposed to engage in? Might I suggest a couple? Perhaps our Lord wants us to be bolder in our conversation with people. It is an ultimate risk to speak up sometimes, but maybe that's a risk we need to take. When people are standing around the water cooler telling jokes, and they're getting dirtier and dirtier, maybe you dare to tell a clean joke, which will clearly bomb, but what you're saying is, that's too far. Maybe when you're sitting with people and they start trashing somebody who's not there and they're all piling on, maybe you speak up in that person's defense. Just say something good to stem the tide. When coworkers, when you're all together, bosses are there and you're plotting on a new way to cheat customers, maybe you say, that's not the right thing for us to do. When talking about the hard stuff that somebody's going through. Maybe you're talking with somebody and they're dealing with some hard stuff. Maybe you mention Jesus in the conversation. When was the last time you brought God into a conversation you were having with somebody? It takes guts. Like, do people who are close to you in life even know you're part of a church? What are you doing with the opportunities that God is giving you with the people who are around you every day? Please don't just do nice things and then think that you've done everything that you need to do to help those people towards heaven when you walk away. Seek chances to say something. Ask God to give you wisdom and courage, and then speak up. If you see somebody with a flat tire, and you stop and you help them, and they say, oh, thank you so much. Here, can I give you some? No, I'm just trying to help. When they say you're welcome, when they say thank you, don't just say you're welcome and drive away smiling, thinking, oh, wow, what is such a good Christian I am. Because those people are not praising God for what you did. As they drive away with their not flat tire, they're saying, wow, what a nice person that was. which is good, but it's, you could do better. So do good. Do good for people. And when they say thank you, say something back that points to Jesus. Like when they say thank you, say, well, Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And if I was stuck out here in the rain, boy, I sure would want somebody to help me. Or when they say, thank you for helping me, say, well, Jesus teaches us that the good life is all about serving people, and I think he's right, so I'm glad I had this chance to help you. Or when they say, thank you for helping, say, well, our church thinks that we can make the world better if we would just show people kindness like Jesus did. Or when they say, thank you so much for helping me, say, well, I just kind of did this because I wanted a chance to tell you that you need to repent before you burn in the fires of hell. You know, something subtle like that. Just kind of slip it in there, right there. But really, do you talk with people about the kingdom? Often? Does that come up? Sometimes? Ever? And if not, if you never talk to anybody else about what we have, is it because you're afraid of how that might go? Is it out of fear? If so, please realize that that's exactly why the third guy got no love from the owner. Because he didn't want anything to go wrong, so he took no chances and he made no profit. Fear ruins life. And speaking out is dangerous, true, but Jesus' team is full of risk takers. And not just in what you say, but in what you do, in your actions. Are you bold? Like maybe in this way. When somebody fails you badly, do you give them more chances or are they dead to you? Are you, in your heart, are you basically a forgiving person or are you a serious grudge holder? Jesus willingly ate a lot of hurt so that reconciliation could happen. People on his team do the same, which is risky. It is risky to tell someone who hurt you, I forgive you. What if they think that means they got away with it? What if they think that means they can do it again? What if other people find out that you forgave them and they think poorly of you for doing that? What if it keeps hurting all the time after you've forgiven them? How in the world can forgiving someone who deserves to be run over with a car possibly work out in your favor? It seems like it can. It seems like it won't. It seems like it'd be crazy to forgive, right? But if you know your judge, you know that he is all about forgiving people. And he especially likes it when we trust him and we do what he tells us to do, even though that makes no sense to us. So do you have anybody in your life you got a good reason to hate? How about take a chance instead? In your actions, be bold. And while we're here, I'll do a financial one too. Why not? Jesus' story is all about finances. Let's bring it back straight to us. These three guys had use of their owner's money. For a while, their owner entrusted them with a bunch of his money. And they could have done anything with it that they wanted to. They could have spent it on themselves. They could have invested it and kept all the interest for themselves. He let them have it, and they totally got to decide what they wanted to do with it. And two of them decided they would use it to advance the owner's business. So how'd that work out for them? Pretty well, because when he came back, the owner saw what they had done with his money, and they said, oh, you will always have a place with me. So God gives you money. Yeah, I know you earn it. But the body you earn it with, and the brains that you use to earn it, and the job that you have to earn it, and the nation in which you live at the time of history in which you live, that you need to earn all that, he gives you all that. So really, God gives you your money, which is actually his money, but he lets you hold on to it and use it like you want to use it. The question is, are you using what God has given you to get him more of what he wants? Are you even sometimes taking chances with what you have to advance his kingdom? Or are you using everything that he gives you for what you want in life? If so, Jesus' story might indicate that you're going to miss out on a big payout at the end. I heard a story one time about a general contractor who owned a big company, big construction company. He had lots of people working for him. He's making oodles and oodles of money for a long time. And before the owner decided he was going on an extended vacation, he told one of his best foremen, a guy who had been with him from the very beginning, that while he was gone, he wanted him to build a house. He gave him the plans. He gave him the credit cards. He said it just needed to be done by the time he got back. And the foreman looked the plans over after the guy left, and he realized this is going to be a really nice house. It was a really nice house. And the foreman thought to himself, you know, I've worked a long time for this guy, and I've not gotten a lot from this company. I've worked my tail off over the years, and I deserve more than I've gotten. So the foreman came up with a plan to get what he thought was his out of the project. Where the plans called for the finest materials, He bought poor quality materials and he pocketed the difference. When the plans required the most skilled laborers, he hired the cheapest he could find and he pocketed the difference. And when the house was finally finished, it contained second-grade lumber, poorly poured concrete, cheap wiring, subpar plumbing, and second-rate windows. This foreman cut every corner he could think of in the construction of that house. And it looked shiny and new on the outside. It looked big and beautiful from the outside, but everything that you could not see in that house was junk. When the general contractor came back from his vacation, he looked at the house and he asked the foreman what he thought of the house, and the guy who built it said, "Well, I'm satisfied with it." At which point, the general contractor said, "Good, because I really appreciate all the hard work and dedication you've shown this company over the years, and I've been trying for a long time to think of a way I could show my appreciation, and I finally figured it out." At which point, the owner held out the keys to the new home to the foreman who had just built it and said, "Here you go, all yours." Folks, you can live your whole life in fear. You can avoid all risk-taking for the kingdom in your life if you want to. And the life that you build that way might look pretty good from the outside, but you were made for so much more. In fact, Jesus says that that life is not even worth the living, which is why he urges us, he pleads with us, he tells us odd stories, hoping that we will trust him, that we will follow him, that we will take chances that he puts in front of us. Because only when we're willing to dare to do stuff for his team will we find what we're really longing for in life. So how about this? This week, try something for the king that would take real courage on your part. One bold step in his direction, which might end up with you hearing the words, "Well done." Let's pray.